Hello and welcome to Adventures in Venueland, an EVMC podcast. Join us for this all-access pass backstage and behind the scenes with some of the brightest minds that cross the scope of the live event industry. I'm Dave Rettelberger.
And I'm Paul Hooper. We'll introduce you to incredible guests who journey with us as we dive deep into the world of venues, tours, festivals, and everything in between. Grab your laminate and meet us in Venueland.
Remember the days when you would just be able to do marketing for one venue? Well, today's guest not only has an outdoor amphitheater, a music hall that does, you know, Broadway shows and ballet and opera, also a stadium, we're talking a museum, a 277-acre city park and National Historic Landmark in Dallas, Texas. Let's check in with the Senior Director of Marketing for Fair Park there in Dallas, Julian Bowman. Over 1,000 events a year. What are you doing talking to us? You should be busy.
Well, fortunately for us, we have a lot of tenants that oversee those events. So it gives me a little time to speak with you guys. So thanks for having me.
That's a lot of different types of venues, too. We often hear about someone maybe dabbling in a theater and arena or an arena and a stadium or something, but it seems like you all kind of have your hand in all the types, which is kind of incredible. Is that fun because it's sort of gives you a good, well-rounded group of venues or locations that you can sort of collaborate between?
Absolutely. It's very unique in a sense that, we're somewhat of an entertainment complex. As you mentioned, we are a National Historic Landmark, so we're on that register to where, we're considered an important place historically by the government, because Fair Park has been around since 1886. Now, there's been different iterations of the park since then. As we know it today, really 1936 is that marker, which was the Texas Centennial. And at the time, the architect George Dahl saw a vision of bringing an Art Deco style entertainment complex to Dallas to put Dallas on the map. So while we do have a theater, we have a Live Nation amphitheater as well. You already talked about the different tenants we have. We also are host to the State Fair of Texas, which is America's biggest state fair. And then we also have over 500,000 square feet of exhibition space, but we're home to Cotton Bowl Stadium, which, you know, is what I use is really a way to introduce myself. Because when I say Fair Park, there are a lot of Fair Parks around the country. But when you say Cotton Bowl Stadium, that has some cachet. So I'm actually looking at it right now, and it's really cool to be such a part of something that's so historic.
So what are you doing these days at Cotton Bowl Stadium?
Well, right now we're actually, we just broke ground, or we're about to have an official groundbreaking ceremony on a $140 million renovation to the venue, which is the single largest investment in cash in that venue since, you know, it was built back in 1930. So you have a near 100-year-old stadium that has grown from a 40,000 seat stadium to now a 92,000 seat stadium. And during that time frame, while we've added more seats, we haven't added a bunch of concourse space. And so this first renovation step is going to add some more space in our main gate, which is the iconic front that you see with the neons at Cotton Bowl Stadium. We're adding escalators to help people get people to the second level without having to come into the first level, which can help create better traffic flow on our concourses. We're adding some restrooms, some improved concessions, and then we're moving our press box, which is currently two floors in the tower, which, I mean, who needs two floors of a press box in a building that doesn't have a tenant? So we're moving our press box, and we're adding some premium space to kind of bring us up to current model so we can host a few more events that are on a national level. But, I mean, you've heard of the Cotton Bowl, of course, because of the Red River robbery. I said that right. Wow. Between Texas and Oklahoma. Yeah. So you've heard that because of that game between Texas and Oklahoma. Which I've been a part of here now for my 5 years here, which is really cool. And also it was home to the original home of the Cotton Bowl game, so Cotton Bowl Classic, which is now at AT&T Stadium. But it's also hosted artists like Elvis, Rolling Stones multiple times. We've hosted Coldplay. We've had the U.S. national team. We've had the Mexican national team. We've had World Cup games. Most recently, we had Karol G, which is one of the hottest names touring out there right now. Sure. And so we're about to go into the night for about 2 years. We'll take a break in between that. to host the games in fall 2024. Then we get back into the stadium because in addition to the Red River Rivalry, we host Grambling versus Prairie View, which is called State Fair Classic, one of the most attended HBCU football games in the country. So we'll host those games this fall, and then we get back in there and try to finish up to reopen the venue at some point in 2025 or early 2026 with the thought of having some kind of, I guess, place in the World Cup that's coming to Dallas in 2026.
Yeah, man. I think it's interesting. You sort of hit on it a little bit where you have these historic venues sometimes that are, you know, there's great positives to that because there's a lot of like brand equity and not only, you know, locally, but you've got a lot of brand equity that's, you know, nationally. People know of certain rivalries. They know of certain big events that are going to happen. But then also when you have a historic venue, and I know Dave knows this too, having a over 100-year-old stadium himself, you do have some of these interesting challenges where certain modern standards, you know, didn't exist back then. Even myself, like having worked at Rupp Arena previously, you know, it was like a 45-year-old venue. There were no suites. They didn't have suites in arenas back then. So it's like people would come in and they're like, where are the suites? Are they hit? You know, they're looking, you know, beyond the lights. Are they up at the top? And it's like, they don't exist. And they're like, what? You know, it's like, It's really interesting. And so there are these certain standards that you kind of have to meet for the public currently. But, you know, I think it presents some unique challenges. But, you know, the good thing is it's, you know, a lot of newer venues really wish they had that brand equity, you know?
Yeah, it does present those challenges, but the one thing that you cannot replicate is that historic feel, knowing that, you know, in a situation watching games and, you know, and events the same way people were watching them in the mid-1900s, which some people may say, you know, well, they didn't have Wi-Fi back then. But if you go to an event, you know, you could focus on the event. That's the best part of it. We had the Winter Classic here at the beginning of 2020. Which we all know how that year went after the Winter Classic.
Yeah, for sure.
We started it off with a bang with over 85,000 fans inside of Cotton Bowl Stadium to watch the Stars comeback win against the Nashville Predators. But the cool part about hosting it here is we were able to provide that, not only that Texas feel, so there was a, you know, a bull riding on the field. We had pig races on the field, the Cowboys, the Stars came out dressed in full cowboy gear. We also were able to provide a kind of a state fair atmosphere with our midway being open. We had rides, all kinds of different activations because the stadium's so unique because it's tucked in the middle of all these historic buildings and then a midway. So we're a little different than a lot of older stadiums in the sense that we can provide other amenities to help with your experience.
Julia, you know, you mentioned the State Fair of Texas being the biggest anywhere. So talk to me a little bit about that event, because we've all heard the legend of this fair, but what actually does it encompass?
Well, whatever your heart desires. Now, we don't deal with
every fried food under the moon and then 10 you never even knew existed, probably.
Exactly. if you can think of it, it can be fried at the State Fair. So we work directly with their team. They have a great team that has been putting on that event for over 130 years. So they have really thought of everything as far as creating that Texan feel. It's the most Texas place, our Texan place on earth. That's their slogan. And so they love to use that. And so at the event, when you come here, you can get everything from the best rides, the most thrilling rides, to the best food you can encounter. I guess the best thing I've eaten at the State Fair, I guess that would give people an idea, is I had a fried peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And believe it or not, it was absolutely delicious.
It actually sounds really good.
And it's also home to the original corny dog. They call them corny dogs here, not corn dogs. So Fletcher's corny dog, and which is also the best corn dog I've ever had in my life. So, you know, really, it's a full culinary experience. But what makes it unique as well is they are home to an auto show. So you can see all the different cars, all car makers bringing their cars here to roll them out for the new year. So any different electric vehicles were really on display last year. Probably be the same case this year. I don't want to speak for everything they have in store because, like I said, there's a different team that runs that. But they get over 2.5 million visitors a year. That's their average visitor total. For the event that runs 4 weekends from September to October. So, you know, really, when you come to the State Fair of Texas, you can expect Texas.
with that happening, you know, later in the year than a lot of the state fairs around the country. Do you guys have like an on season, you know, obviously with the outdoor amphitheater and the Cotton Bowl, is there like a busy season for you and then a quieter season for you?
Yeah, well, the state fairs have a unique deal with the city of Dallas to where from August 1 until I believe 30 days after the state fair ends, which it usually ends, I believe that third weekend in October, they have the keys to Fair Park. So in order for us to host an event, for instance, when we had Carol G in September of 2023, we worked with the fair to make sure we're not really messing with their operations because it takes them a while to set up an event that's so massive, that welcomes so many people because they really activate every part of our campus. So all 277 acres get activated during the State Fair of Texas. So they have the keys to the park. So we work directly with them whenever we want to host events. We don't really do too many things after that first weekend or so in September because it can get too difficult traffic-wise for the guests, not just the guests, but for State Fair. We don't want to get in their way as they're setting up. But then after their event ends, in November is when we pick up. We have a few holiday events, maybe a few markets here and there. And then our busy season really starts now. So when spring rolls around, we kick off most of our events. We have we usually started off with a few races in February, and then the North Texas Irish Festival, which welcomes 20 to 40,000, just depending upon the year, guests here at Fair Park.
That's a lot of people and a lot of big events. You know, as they say, everything's bigger in Texas, and it seems appropriately so.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's really... It's very fascinating to kind of see or hear how sort of these large scale historic events are organized like that and how massive they've become. You know, obviously you've got the big, you know, rodeo event in Houston, but you've got the state fair in Dallas. I mean, what is that Texas market like? You know, I don't know if you've lived in Texas very long, but like, and we'll kind of talk more about, you know, your industry history, but you know, from your knowledge of other markets, like what do you think makes Texas unique other than obviously being a huge state?
The pride. I mean, people have a lot of pride in the state and being Texan. So that comes through a lot, especially, like I said, at the State Fair of Texas, it comes through. But and people like big things. One of the things I did realize when I got here is when something's good, people don't mind waiting. So lines are like normal at restaurants that are, you know, barbecue, which is this sure. state is known for its barbecue.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, people wait for it. And it's the same situation at events when you have different food vendors. People don't mind waiting in line for something good. But what I've realized here is people enjoy the crowd. They enjoy that sense of doing something that they know is unique to Texas. And they know that they can be proud of and kind of, in a sense, brag. There's a swagger, I guess you'd say, that comes along here. And in Dallas particularly, we've worked a lot with Visit Dallas, which is the CVB here in the city. And they're in the process of rolling out a new brand. And really during that process, they realized like this city is really like can do, you know, in a sense, that maverick spirit. So really, if it can be imagined, they want to try to do it. And I know you've had other people from the area. One of the biggest parts of being in this area is, you know, sports. Of course, you have the Cowboys, which are one of the most iconic brands in the world in sports. But you also have the Dallas Mavericks, the Dallas Stars. You have FC Dallas. You have the Dallas Wings. And you have all these different professional teams. But we also play host to a bunch of different smaller events. Here at Fair Park, we actually host the Dallas Cup opening ceremonies, which is one of the longest running youth soccer tournaments in the country, over 40 years. And so we'll host that actually this weekend at the Cotton Bowl. And they have international soccer teams and also teams from the region that come and play at the Cotton Bowl for the opening ceremony. So you have your super duper large events where, you know, you'll have 100 to 200,000 people on this campus in one day, like the Texas OU game. We usually have over 200,000 people attend the state fair in that game. But we also, you know, we're a city park. So we really want to make sure that we're taking care of our residents and providing things for them to do. So we have events that are free that where we host 20 to 30 people, and we're just as proud of those.
Yeah.
Tell me about your role, because, you know, the senior director of marketing can mean a lot of things in a lot of places. But with all this ground to cover, literally and figuratively, what is it that you do there for Fair Park?
Well, you know, I oversee the day-to-day marketing and PR operations. So like I said, the State Fair has their own team. So does Broadway Dallas, which does exactly what it sounds like. They're the Broadway arm of the city of Dallas, but they host a ton of concerts and one-off events as well. And then Live Nation has a venue here. There is a children's aquarium here. There is a botanical gardens. We have an African American museum, and then we have the Hall of State, which is one of the most historic buildings in the state of Texas. So mentioning all this, and you have all these different entities that run themselves, our goal is to try to find a way to knit us together so that the rising tide can lift all the boats. So that's a part of my job, is to make sure that we're increasing our foot traffic and our awareness to all the events and the activities that happen here at Fair Park. In addition to that, here working with OVG, we try to book the venue as much as we can. And in order for Fair Park to be successful, we have to have multiple events happening over the course of the day or a weekend. So one weekend you may come here and you can go from Art in the Park. You could bring your kids to do some free activities around our lagoon. You can hop into the aquarium to see one of their cool exhibits. Leave the aquarium and go to a barbecue festival that's in front of the Cotton Bowl. Leave that and then go to a Jurassic Quest, which is one of the largest traveling dinosaur exhibits. So we're also in charge of, my team is in charge of promoting those events, helping us drive revenue, helping us sell tickets, bring more awareness. What makes this job also unique is we are a part of a public-private partnership with Fair Park First, which is a nonprofit that was created to oversee management of Fair Park. But when the nonprofit was created, of course, they did not have the arm to book events, to run venues. And so that's when they partnered with our team at the time with Spectra, now OVG, to run the day-to-day management here at Fair Park. So we work directly with them on a part of it that makes it unique. We have to raise funds to help maintain the park, but also push it into the future. So we can get into some of the things that we're working on here later, but ultimately we have a fundraising arm as well. So we help them promote the venue to help raise funds, which is a little bit different than normal, just selling tickets.
Being this sort of glue guy, if you will, like you said, kind of making sure all the partners are on the same page. I think a lot of listeners probably can relate to that. Often it's maybe, I don't want to say simple because it's not simple, but you know, it might just be a relationship between a primary tenant and a venue or something like that. But are there any challenges or any things you've seen that have helped you in kind of keeping everyone on the same page? You know, and I think it's always a fun, I feel like market to market, it is so different, right? You talk to some people and they're like, oh yeah, our team, our ownership, you know, we're just like totally interwoven. And other ones are like, we're completely separate, but that works because of this, this, and this. Or sometimes, probably more often than not, it doesn't work sometimes for people. So, you know, are there any things you've seen that, you know, has helped kind of keep all the pieces, you know, oiled and moving along together in the machine?
Well, it's as simple as communication, right? I mean, we've tried our best to open up more communication channels with our partners, because the biggest challenge that we have is parking. We have a lot of parking here at Fair Park. We have over 14,000 spaces. However, a lot of those spaces are not close to the main event areas. And so we play a little bit of Tetris in a sense at times to make sure that we're parking cars in a way that is efficient and helps people get to the event. Because we are so close to downtown, that does present some traffic issues as well. So we work through that. We work with our local authorities to make sure that we have adequate traffic plans. But either way, we meet every week with all of our different cultural institutions and attractions. That's our term for them here, not tenants, mainly because you know, we are a cultural campus. And so we meet weekly to talk about what's happening at each of our venues and then to make sure that we're all on the same page. In addition to that, our team, our marketing team, meets monthly with everybody to find ways that we can work together to help ourselves as far as building more awareness, potential cross promotions. You know, one time we had a Saigon, it was a Vietnam-based Broadway show. The name escapes me right now, but it was coming to a music hall. Well, here at Fair Park, we are home to the Texas Vietnam Veterans Memorial, which pays honor to all the Texas veterans who fought in that conflict and lost their lives, and in addition to the ones who were missing in action. So it's right across the street or park from the music hall, which hosted the show. And so we did a dedication of the memorial, in addition to having members of the Broadway show sing the national anthem prior to the dedication. Nice. And then worked with different local authorities and PR outlets and all of our different media to have some different coverage to help sell tickets to the show. So we were able to build awareness to this really cool memorial here at Fair Park, in addition to generating revenue for one of our partners. And so that is birthed from this communication and our different meetings that we have every month.
Julian, you are originally from, you know, Columbia, South Carolina, and you went to school for a journalism degree originally. What were you thinking you were going to do when you grew up?
I wanted to be Stuart Scott. So when I was
you did some sports broadcasting, right?
I did. I was in middle school.
Than the other side of the pillow.
That's right. Booyah. So I'll never forget seeing him on TV when I was in middle school. He just jumped off the screen. I mean, he spoke in a way that a lot of people that I grew up around spoke. You know, the slang, interweaving slang into his highlights. And that was so cool to me. And at the time, SportsCenter had, you know, superstar anchors. I mean, they still have people who are known now, but you had Stuart Scott, you had Keith Olbermann, you had Kilborn and Dan Patrick and so on and so forth. So you had all these different people, and then here comes Stuart Scott. And I was like, that's what I want to do. And so everything I did prior to going to college was setting me up for that. In high school, I created a sports show and did some things like that. So I went to the University of Missouri, which is the number one journalism school in the country. So I was able to get a academic scholarship there. And I walked on the football team because I wanted to play football. I had a quick cup of coffee on the team. And after I finished my football career, which was short, focused my studies on trying to become the next Stuart Scott. So I worked at the NBC station there on campus. I was not on campus, but it's tied to the university. My senior year, I was able to anchor some sports, got out of college and was working at the local ABC affiliate in Columbia, South Carolina to keep my tape fresh. But during that time frame, that was in 2004-05, it was a very competitive industry, and it just didn't work out for me the way I wanted it to. So I went back to school because I really enjoyed sports and I wanted to work in sports in some way. And so sport management and the field intrigued me. So I went back to University of South Carolina thinking I would potentially be, you know, a sports information director or somebody who works in the athletic department. But then I fell into venue management, facility management.
And they've got a good program there for it, you know, or at least they're sort of known for it.
I was part of the second graduating class there for the grad program. So it was a fairly new program and I'm in it today. So, you know, nearly 20 years later. So I really enjoyed this field. In a sense, I fell into it, but I did. I asked a professor of mine at the time, somebody that we have in common there, Dave, Dr. Mahoney, and she sent me across the street to the Colonial Life Arena, a lady named Andrea McGavin at the time, who's Andrea Willis, I believe now, hired me as an intern, and I told her I wanted to do grassroots, and so I just put flyers and posters and lawn signs.
I'm sure she was so happy to have you. She's probably like, exactly. Boy, do I have a list for you to work on.
Funny story. At the time, I didn't know what grassroots meant. It sounded fun. I Googled it, and I thought, like, you know, radio promotion, right? Who knew it was just literally going to businesses across the city, trying to get them to put our posters up in their window. That was my first taste of it. You know, it led to what Tom Paquette, who was the general manager there at the time, he let us know that he felt like we had a little bit of a different audience to one of our shows at the time, a lot more African-American attendees to a monster truck show. And he asked us what we did. And I told him I probably went to areas of the city that you all do not go to, but people love to take their kids to things that are fun. And at the time, Monster Jam had the $5 ticket for kids. And so, that week, that was my second month as an intern. I won Employee of the Week. And after that, I got a taste of it and did some other fun promotions because that was during the time frame. And I hate to sound like a get off my line old person, but that was when the stunt was fun. You know, like, hey, how can I create a stunt that's going to get on the news? Now sure. It's about digital. It's about metrics. It's about tracking and everything. Yeah.
And the stunt's still fun to me. Don't worry.
Yeah, it's still fun. So we were able to do some fun stuff.
But you're right. It's a little. It's become a bit more of a numbers game, numbers industry, and less about a gimmick. But for better and worse, probably. You know, or in both. But.
Yeah. So that's how I got started. And you know, here I am in the industry.
You did a little stint in radio as a sales rep, as a former radio person. That can be a dark place.
Oh, yes. I don't want to talk about it. I will say this. If you can sell radio, you can sell anything. You're selling air. Literally, right. Air.
If you can survive the first couple years, then you're all right. But I'm telling you, it can be a really tough place to get started. But that said, it probably helped you become a better marketing person because you understood, when you're talking to those sales reps, kind of what they're going through.
Yeah, it actually helped me realize what I didn't want to do.
That's important.
Yeah, that's true.
I worked at, which is, it was called Clear Channel at the time. Of course, it's iHeart now. And Abby Foster was the director of marketing at the Colonial Life Arena when I left. And so I stayed in touch with her. We kept a great relationship. And so after a couple of years in radio, I was actually her rep for a couple of shows. I went to her and told her, I was like, hey, I'd like to get back into this. Like, I really enjoyed it. And she was like, well, if I hear anything, I'll let you know. And then there was an opening in Rio Rancho, New Mexico, at a Global Spectrum building at the time. And so she sent my resume out there, and then the person that I got along, Mike Killian, who was the AGM and director of marketing at the time, he brought me out there, and that's how I started my career in 2009. And here I am in Dallas 15 years later.
So, yeah, I mean, you're there in Rio Rancho, but you go from there to Dawson Creek in British Columbia. What's it like moving to Canada?
That was a culture shock. I'd never left the country prior to that job.
Is that the actual Dawson's Creek?
Oh, please don't say that out loud. They will get very mad. Dawson's
Creek. I take it back.
So that's a show, of course. The town is in northern British Columbia. It is Dawson Creek, so no S there after Dawson. And it is a really unique town because it was really became a fame during the World War. It was a great place for the United States to get tanks to Alaska. So part of the reason why it's called the Mile Zero City is because of that. It's Mile Zero of the Alaskan Highway. So that's kind of what it's famous for. So during the summer, you have a lot of tourists who drive through the town. But throughout the year, they host a ton of events at the event center there. It was called the Encana Event Center when I was there. I think it's Oventon is Event Center now. I'm sorry if I butchered that name. But we hosted a ton of events. Probably the most memorable one while I was there was Jeff Foxworthy. And the reason it was memorable is because when I met him, he heard me speaking and he heard kind of my Southern drawl. And he was just like, you don't sound like you're from here. And so we ended up talking for like 30 minutes just about South Carolina because he had a connection to South Carolina. So that was fun. But we hosted, John Cougar Mellencamp. They hosted KISS right before I got there. They hosted a ton of big events because while the town itself is only 12,000 people, the area has around 100,000 or so within about a 2-hour drive. And people up there, a 2-hour drive is nothing for them. But it was really unique in a sense to where in my brain at the time, Canada and America were very similar because I never left the country. So I didn't know anything. And, travel is what helps you realize you don't know anything. Sure. So when I got up there, it's back to the roots of grassrooting, word of mouth. You know, they didn't have a bunch of media. It wasn't like social media was still fairly new at the time in 2011. So that you didn't have the same tools that you have now. But it really was about word of mouth. And so, we did really well there during that stint. But I got a call to fill in as up there. Maternity leave is a year. And so they called me and asked me if I'd be interested in going up there for a year to get a promotion. So I went from marketing manager to director of marketing. And then they told me at that time, whenever that time is up, when you want an opportunity, if it's the right one, we'll back you for it. And so I was there for about 10 months or so. And then the opportunity in Orlando came open and I moved back to the States. So talk about a difference in temperature. To go right. From a place extremes. Where I experienced negative 47 temperature, which is unique and it hurts.
It hurts.
Yeah. To going to sunny, warm Orlando, Florida.
Was that an intentional opportunity in Florida where you were just looking for like the hottest climate you could possibly find to like thaw your body out?
maybe. But I did value my time up there because it was a different pace.
Sure.
So it was fun.
So tell me, you kind of go into a different role here once you get down to Orlando, where you are a regional marketing director. So what, how did your job kind of shift once you got to Florida?
Well, after a few years at that job in Florida, Bob Schwartz, our former chief marketing officer, reached out and asked me if I'd be interested in being the regional after a few people had left our company. And it was really cool because you got to help people grow, you know, help people learn, help people think about events in a different way. Also got to help the company grow, which was something that I was passionate about because the company invested in me and believed in me whenever they sent me to Northern Canada. Some people would say, did they really believe in you to send you up there? But I felt that way. But because they called me, you know? That was really unique in a sense because not only was I focusing on my building in Orlando, which was a busy building there on campus at UCF, where I was also trying to help all of our different venues in the Southeast with their events and their initiatives. So that included everything from, you know, your busier buildings like Augusta Entertainment Complex and the Tech Conference Center in Old Dominion to some of our newer buildings, which were in Macon, Georgia, and Albany, Georgia, also the Crown Complex in Fayetteville. So it was different markets. It was really fun to you know, deal with your tertiary markets, but also some secondary ones like Orlando or Tampa. So that was very unique. It kept me very busy, though. I will say that there were a lot of emails sent on the weekend following up with people. So but I enjoyed that.
So from there, you know, after, you know, what, 9-year run with Spectra, Comcast, you make the switch over to OVG and in your current role. Talk to us about how that happened.
So in 2018, things started to heat up with the contract here in Dallas. I was working with some of our business development partners on some different venues in the Southeast. Like I just talked about Albany, you know, I was a part of that pitch. I was a part of a few other pitches here and there. During that time and some of those meetings, I got word about Dallas. Well, go to summer 2018, it really starts to heat up. And one of the business development people gave me a call and said, I really think you'd be a good fit for this role in Dallas. What do you think? Can you come here next week to help us pitch? And I said, well, you know, I'll be there next week to help pitch. But as far as the role goes, we got to talk about it because I do enjoy living in Orlando. I like what I'm doing now. But I'd love to hear more about the role. The cool part about working here at Fair Park as a senior director of marketing is when we got the contract in January 1, 2019, it was always envisioned for us to do more than just bring events. It was really a part of how do we connect with our community. And a big passion of mine that I started to develop in Orlando was community outreach and really helping areas, you know, filled with people that look like me, African-American communities. And helping understand that there is an opportunity for you to work in an industry that's not necessarily, you know, you can work in sports and entertainment and not be on the road and not be an artist, not be an athlete.
Sure.
But then in addition to that, it's just really providing mentorship. You don't have to work in this industry, but just to see another person that looks like you doing something successful can go a long way because it helped me when I was growing up. So I heard that. That was very intriguing. Finding out a place that's, you know, older than you and that will outlive you. Because a lot of times we work in arenas that are younger than us. And, you know, we know arenas are built to be replaced. You know,
and knock them down so, and build a new one.
Yeah. You knock them down, you build a new one once the new technology presents itself. And that keeps us all employed and it keeps our companies growing. So I don't want to down that. But what made Fair Park so different is that, you know, the places that I'm currently sitting in right now, this building was built in 1936. It's still here standing. We're just making renovations to it to bring it into the future, you know, and so I knew that there was an opportunity to work on something that not only was older than me, but outlived me. And so it was really different than your typical booking a show like the Globetrotters or a concert and doing your normal media mix to promote the event. Here we were working with small festival producers or large festival producers to help them grow their event. You're working with international touring artists. You're also working with different soccer promoters. I mean, here a couple of months ago, we hosted Inter Miami versus FC Dallas in a friendly, and Lionel Messi was here, but the promoter who brought us the show, they were from Argentina. So there was you know, an opportunity there to work with them to show them how to really promote an event here in the States outside of just saying Lionel Messi's coming.
Right, that helps.
So, you know, it gave me an opportunity to really work on some stuff that had a little bit of gravitas. And so that was really intriguing to me. So it's been a really fun run here in the last 5 years, and looking forward to some of the cool things that we have coming up, which would be the renovation here at the Cotton Bowl. But we're also going to build a 14-acre community park. We're replacing one of our parking lots to help. That's another way to help us connect with our community, to provide a green space that they can come for free year-round, even during the state fair of Texas, and enjoy themselves.
I love that. I think it's something that I'm glad you spoke to it, because I sometimes being a part of the community gets overlooked, I think, in some markets. You know, we do get sometimes in this grind of like, how do we sell tickets? How do we get this number? How do we, you know, make the promoters happy? And it's kind of, it gets, you know, understandably, you know, it's a very high pressure industry, but I think these buildings live in these communities, you know, the people that visit them live in these communities. And so I love the attention and the focus that, you know, you have on that, but also, you know, I hope more venues do that. And I think they are, but, you know, doing more, what are their opportunities for outreach, you know, outside of, you know, what we're doing for these artists? Can we make an impact in our city? Can we do some, you know, things for the youth here? Could we do donations to charities? Could we, yeah, plant trees in a park for an artist instead of maybe giving them, you know, a jersey that they have 100 of or something, you know, like.
That's
you know,
actually so, a cool idea.
Yeah.
I mean, thank you, Paul. I'm going to write that one down.
Yeah, exactly. Dang it, man. Well, I work in Parks and Rec, so you can plant some trees in Lexington and I'll give them a home. I hope that, you know, I think we're heading in that direction, but I love that that is something that really sort of drew you to Dallas, and that you're really forwarding that mission of, you know, doing more than just sort of bringing the entertainment, but also having this impact on the community.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big part of, well, that's a part of me as a person, but really one of the things that we're proud of, we being Fair Park First and OVG here, is our, we have an internship program with two local high schools, which are majority minority high schools. So mainly Hispanic and Black. We take 10 students from each school. We pay them over the summer. We feed them every day, and we show them this industry. So they learn everything from marketing to event booking to aquarium to the African American Museum and what it takes to put on an exhibit there. They also work with the state fair. So it's a great opportunity for people who live literally a mile less than that, like outside of our walls, to know that, you know, when you go to college, when you get your next degree, or you're taking your next step, there's an opportunity for you to work right here in your community. So it's also paying students you know, it's great for them to have that opportunity. In general, this area has a lower household income than a lot of areas in Dallas. And so there's an opportunity there. In addition to that, we do work with nonprofits here at our events. We've donated, since we've been here, nearly $500,000 through fundraising, through concessions, at different events, which has been really cool to be a part of. And then that community park that we've discussed, that's going to be our, not just our part of giving back some of the space, because there is a troubled history, like anything in this country that has been around for so long, it's going through its you know, history. One of which is the area that we chosen for the community park. That used to be a home, a neighborhood. It was a neighborhood to a lot of Black families here in the area, and it was taken via some shady practices by eminent domain in the city. There are stories about it. And so part of our charge is to, in a sense, I don't want to give it back, but this is one of the ways that we can give back, in a sense, to where this was an area that once was for the community and now it is going to be for the community again. But that's going to play our part with the climate, to where we, Fair Park itself is a large area with a lot of parking. As I said before, we have, I think about 70% of our site is not permeable. So it's hotter here in the summer than it is in other places in the city. So adding a green space, planting some trees, adding some more park space is going to help do our part with the climate and helping reduce the temperature around here in Dallas.
Let's talk a little bit about you as a person beyond the job. How did you meet your wife, Anna?
I met her in New Mexico. Fun. So thank you, Abby, for sending my resume out there. I just moved to New Mexico, and I was in the city for about a week when a friend of mine on Facebook saw that I moved, and he told me, hey, I met a group of girls there, and they were really cool and fun. I gave them your name, so here's their number, hit them up, and they'll take you out. And so I was like, cool. And I hit him up, and it happened to be Anna's roommate at the time. And so I went to their apartment. Anna answered the door. And I'm like, oh, wow, okay. she said, are you Julian? I said, yes. She's like, sit on the couch. Jenna's not ready. And she just walked off. She may have said five words to me that night. And I'm just like, wow, what does this woman have against me? And so, you know, we still all became friends over time, because I'm persistent in a sense. She turned me down once or twice before she said yes, and we go on our first date. But we met about 2 weeks into my move to New Mexico. We became friends, and we were friends for about a year before we started dating. And that was in 2010. So we've been together now for almost 14 years.
So, and you got two little ones, right?
Yeah, two little ones. I got my boy, John. He is three, and he is a ball of fun, as you can imagine boys can, are. Basically, it's just an exercise in trying to keep him from hurting himself every day. but he's a smart, very inquisitive kid. And then I have my baby girl, Sloan. She will turn one this year in May. And so she has me wrapped around her finger. She didn't have to do that much, but I'm already there. So the cool part about having the two kids now is as you all know, we can take this job with us home a lot. Sure. And prior to having kids, that's what I did. Took it home. Get home, I'd open up my laptop and watch TV while answering emails or doing certain things. But, you know, what I realized now that I'm focusing on my family when I get home is that the work is still going to get done, and it's still going to be there when we get back. So it's helped me give me a little bit more perspective. And so, but really, really enjoying being a father. So I didn't know I'd be a father to toddlers in my 40s, but here we are.
But here we are.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you are a busy man with everything going on at all the venues and the family. We're going to wrap things up here. But before we do, I want to hit you with our fast five. It's just five quick questions, looking for your quick, immediate response. First up, do you remember your very first concert?
Yes, it was MC Hammer featuring Boyz II Men and Jodeci.
I went to that tour.
Yeah, that's a lineup, man.
Yeah, I was 9 years old, and I should not have been at that show. but MC Hammer was for the family. Jodeci was not. But I just remember going to that show. We wore our Adams Family shirts because of the Adams Family soundtrack. At that time, and he did not perform that song. So that's why I remember it. That was the fourth grade.
I remember that tour because by the time the tour got to us, Boyz II Men had gotten, they had like really blown up. And they were kind of opening for Hammer. But by the time they got to us, they were a little hotter than Hammer was at that moment. So it was, but it's still, boy, that guy can put on a show, I'll tell you that. How about an all-time favorite concert?
All-time favorite concert is going to be, you know what? This is a hard one. Of course, when you work in the industry, you have a ton of different shows. And I'm going to say this and then think of a different one, but I'm going to go with the Usher show in Vegas, only because I went to it before it blew up to what it is now. But it's just memorable because I grew up listening to Usher. And so he's probably the only guy, because, you know, with Super Bowl performance, the only guy that can have men singing and women singing all at the same time and nobody feels embarrassed. So I really enjoyed the Usher tour in Vegas. I went to see it in 21, August 21. So that's probably my most recent favorite concert that comes off the top of my head.
Here's a tough one for you. Carolina barbecue or Texas barbecue?
Oh, you're about to get him in trouble either way.
I'm going to cheat. If it's pig, it's South Carolina. If it's beef, it is Texas. Okay. I've never had brisket like you do in Texas. It melts in your mouth. You don't need a fork. You can, you know, you don't even need teeth to eat it. However, I just the way that we cook pig in South Carolina, they don't do it like that here in Texas. They don't really care. So it's fine. So, but I grew up eating ribs and different parts of the pig that if I say on public, people might, make a face. But just imagine all the things that basically we ate the whole pig. Let's just put it that way.
Growing just up. Say that.
So I don't want to, today, I guess you'd say because I'm here in Texas, I'm a really big fan of brisket. So we'll go with Texas. But just because I really like brisket right now.
I know with little kids, they like to watch the same thing over and over again. What's the one movie or TV show that's always on repeat in your house these days?
Right now, Paw Patrol and Blaze and the Monster Machines. Paramount Plus is getting a lot of burn in my house right now. But it replaced Encanto and Moana. We went through all those stages. But right now, it's Paw Patrol and Blaze and the Monster Machines.
Last question for you. You get your own TV show. Cameras follow you all around. What's the theme song or the song that plays over the opening credits to the Julian show?
Oh, wow. That is a tough one. Let's go with T.I., Big Things Popping, only because, you know, we're doing big things here at Fair Park. You know, we're not looking, you know, we do some little stuff as well, but we're doing big things. And so I like to speak to that song. You know, when I'm walking in, that'll be nice. I'm also a big dude, so that's cool to walk into that song. So let's go.
I love it. Hey, thank you so much for the time today. If people want to reach out to you or follow along with what you got going on down there, throw out some plugs or some social links, any of that kind of good stuff.
So you can find me on LinkedIn, of course, Julian Bowman. So, and then you can find me on Instagram at JM_Bowman, BOWMAN. And just, you can request to follow me, and I pretty much let everybody, you know, follow me, it's fine. But, if you want to keep up with some things I do here and there, because I love to travel and showcase my kids doing fun stuff here and there, feel free to follow.
And how about Fair Park?
Fair Park, just follow us at Fair Park Dallas. That's on all social media platforms. You can also follow the Cotton Bowl Stadium. That's at Cotton Bowl Stadium, but it's at Cotton Bowl Stad, which is some reason because X doesn't allow you to have more characters than that.
Yep.
But yeah, so you can follow our accounts there. You know, we're really going to announce some really fun things and changes coming here and upgrades here at Fair Park. So please give us a follow.
Congratulations on everything you have going on there. Just really appreciate getting to learn more about you and everything you have going on down there in Texas.
Thanks for having me on the show. Appreciate you guys.
A big thanks to everybody for listening to this episode of Adventures in Venueland. Remember, you can subscribe and find more episodes wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. We do love your 5-star reviews. It helps others find us. Until the next adventure, I'm Dave Rettelberger.
And I'm Paul Hooper. Thanks for listening, everyone. Adventures in Venueland is a side project of the Event and Venue Marketing Conference, a marketing conference that brings together diversified event and venue professionals to cultivate education, collaboration, and innovation for the growing sports and live entertainment industry. Find out more at eventvenuemarketing.com.
Audio editing and mixing by Camille Faulkner.
Design and digital advertising by Megan Ebeck.
Copywriting and publicity by Samantha Marker.
Guest booking and brand strategies by Paul Hooper.
Guest research by Dave Rettelberger.
Marketing strategies by Paul Hooper, Megan Ebeck, and Samantha Marker. Thanks for joining us. Until the next adventure.